Mark 8, verse 31 to the end, Jesus predicts his death. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. "Get behind me, Satan," he said. "You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Then he called the crowd to him, along with his disciples, and said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels."
Okay, I have a activity for you now. It's just turning to your neighbour and having a chat. But what you need to do is, for those of you who might be older than some of our members here, you might have to remember all the way back to when you were a kid, and what was it that you wanted to be when you grew up? Okay? So I want you to ask these two questions to your neighbours or your table or wherever you're sat. What did you want to be when you grew up? Or if you are of that age, what do you want to be? What would be your dream of when you grew up? And also, have you ever wanted to be something ridiculous or that someone else thought was ridiculous? And what was that like? Okay, I'm going to give you 2 minutes. Is anyone going to be brave and tell me what they wanted to be when they grew up? Barbara.
I wanted to be a bus conductor.
Yes. Do you know, does that answer the next question? Have you ever wanted to do anything that other people thought was ridiculous? No. June. I did too.
There was a lady that gave lessons, but you had to have a proper black skirt. And my mum couldn't afford to buy me a proper black skirt. So she made me one out of the blackout curtains.
This is a good story. Oh, how wonderful. You want to be a scientist. Fantastic. I wonder what things you... Yeah. Yeah. Bradley. Oh, really? What's that?
To be on stage and to write books.
To be on stage and to write books. Fantastic. Big imaginations, I think. Yeah. Jethro. No? It's okay. Anyone else? Anyone else? I'll pick on you, Elijah, if you pick on your friend. Okay, what about, were there things that you have wanted to do in life that when you've told other people they've sort of gone, well, that's just silliness, that's out of the question? No? None of those stories? Okay, that's fine. Well, when I was little, there were two things I really wanted to be on stage as well, that is for sure. I really wanted to go into acting. But the next best thing, I really wanted to be a teacher. I was talking with Mary. Mary wanted to be a teacher and then was a teacher. And I sort of think, I'll tell you what I didn't want to be, or not that I didn't actively want to be it, I just did not imagine that I would ever be a vicar. That really wasn't top of the list of jobs that I thought was going to be my future. But I do think that drama... hopefully the right kind of drama, acting, teaching is kind of in my spirit and is part of you know, what being a vicar actually you have to do. There's something about that. So I don't think what was in me as a child has completely, you know, gone out the window. I think it was always there. And maybe I didn't become an actress or a teacher, but that thing is still there. I think in advance, the right path or the thing that we have to do is not always clear. It's not always clear what is the right path. It's not always clear to us, and it's not always clear to those around us who love us and who want us to make good choices and good decisions. So one of Jesus's best friends, Peter, could not, as you might imagine, get his head around the fact that Jesus seemed to be absolutely fixed on being on a road that was going to get him killed. You think that's probably top of the list, isn't it, of things that you would want to stop people doing, and certainly your friends and those you love. But that wasn't Peter's, of course, only relationship with Jesus. Peter just thought, this absolutely cannot happen. This absolutely cannot happen. Jesus and his closest friends had been together for about 3 years. They'd stuck with Jesus. And, you know, you can imagine at some points Jesus' friends thinking he was a bit of a pain because he got them into troubled situations and he wasn't comfortable to be with. But they had stuck with him, even when others said that Jesus was off his rocker a little bit. And they had given up the stability of their jobs and families to follow Jesus. It had been exciting, and it seemed, up until this point, that all their dreams were going to come true. Their belief in Jesus was right, and they were going to win. They were going to win. God had promised a Messiah who was going to rescue God's people, the Jews, from those people who were keeping them prisoner, the Romans. All the old stories had told of a time when God would send this rescuer. And Peter knew, here he was. It was Jesus. In fact, just before the part of the Bible that Marley read to us is the bit where Peter, you know, confesses that Jesus Christ, Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah. It was all coming together. It was all, you know, culminating in this point. It was all going to be great. It was going to be all right. They would overcome the Romans somehow with Jesus. That we'll worry about the details later. Somehow that was going to happen, and they would win at last. They would be on top. Can you imagine then the disappointment that Peter felt when Jesus said that he was going to be killed? Let's just take Jesus to one side. No. Jesus, that's not what's happening. Okay, don't you know the story? This is how it goes. We get to this point and then we win. And then we win. You've got the wrong ending. We're supposed to be victorious this time. And if that wasn't bad enough, Jesus was saying that they, the disciples, had to do the same thing. Well, that's a bit annoying, isn't it? So Jesus says, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. Where are the, you know, benefits in following Jesus? Isn't it meant to give you something in return? The life that Jesus is leading us all into seems to be a bit of an upside down kingdom. If we try to hold on to our lives, we will lose them. But if we give up our lives to follow Jesus, we give up our need for control and measure and comparison and striving for living in pleasant surroundings to, in other words, win at life. If we give up those things, then we'll get our lives given back to us. It's a strange thing for us to get our head around. So I was thinking, what does that actually mean for us today? And I think if we think about what Jesus was actually about to do, to give up his own life, to be executed as a violent terrorist, to be seen to fail in his mission as the Messiah, to rescue his people, to fail in that mission, I think to reflect on that might give us some ideas about what giving up our lives and taking up our cross is all about. Jesus' journey, which we reflect on from now until Easter, his journey to Jerusalem and to the cross, looked like the biggest failure in human history. And hindsight's a great thing, but it didn't look like the victory over death and sin we now, as Christians, proclaim it to be. That wasn't known in advance. It looked like failure. In order for that spiral of violence and death in which our world is caught up, in order for that to be defeated, in other words, in order for us really to win at this life, it took an act of non-violence, of standing and facing the bully in such a way that that bully was shamed and overcome. And that's a particular way of looking at the cross. We often look at the cross and we think of sacrifice, and we should. But another way of looking at the cross is to see it as the ultimate act of defiance in the face of violence, in the face of death. That's what Jesus did, and he broke it because he didn't repay violence with violence. That kind of spiral takes us up towards a destruction, and Jesus stopped it in its tracks. Christians throughout history have taken this view of the cross to be an example about how they give up their lives and take up their cross and follow Jesus, to stand up to violence with non-violence. And strangely, instead of finding themselves beaten up, they discover that the status quo has been turned upside down, and they receive a new and resurrected life. So I wanted to... where's my book? Aha, thank you. I have a book. And these are some collections of stories which are about people who have faced down violence with non-violence. And I just wanted to tell you a couple of these stories to give you an idea. What does it look like? What does it look like? So that you might know what it looks like in your life. So I'm going to tell a few stories just from all over the world. Okay. The first one is a short story. It's a little bit shocking, but I think it's a good story to tell. This is about the South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu in the time of apartheid in South Africa. And he walked by a construction site on a temporary sidewalk, the width of one person. A white man appeared at the other end of the sidewalk, recognized Tutu, and said, "I don't make way for gorillas." At which Tutu stepped aside, made a deep sweeping gesture, and said, "Ah yes, but I do." A story that's not in here, but I also was reflecting on, was that story of Rosa Parks. And it's Rosa Parks Day in the States, both in December and in February, when it was her birthday. And Rosa Parks was quite famous as the mother of the movement for anti-racism and equality in the States, because she was on a bus, and in the States at that time, in the southern states of America, they would segregate the buses, and you would have whites at the front, non-whites at the back, and in the middle, you would have a section where non-whites were allowed to sit, but if the front part filled up, then you were expected to give up your seat and to move to the back, to stand, or to get off the bus. And so in December, I think it was the 1st of December, she was asked, she was sat with other black people, and they all moved because the front had filled up and all the white people's seats had been filled up and more white people got on. So they were asked to move, and the others did move. And she says in her mind, she just thought that that was the moment that she was not going to move. And so something violent was being done to her, although it's not a physical violence, of course. But her status as a human being was being challenged. And so in the face of that violence, she just sat and was nonviolent. But I think I would suggest that in that moment, the world was changed. The world was changed. Something cracked in that system. And it was part of that journey towards equality, which the whole world is moving forward, but it's still in that journey. But the world was changed in that moment by what she did. She took up her cross and stood. Tell you one last story, which I think is a bit of an apocryphal story, but I like it, and it's a good way of dealing with violence. There was an old man who lived next to a school. Every day when school was out, boys would pass by the porch where the old man was sitting and curse him with every epithet they knew. One day, the old geezer called them over and said, "Tomorrow when you come by, I'll give you $1 to curse me." That was too good a deal to pass up, and so they agreed. Next day they came back and cursed him royally. "That's fine," he said, paying up. "Now tomorrow I'll give you 50 cents to curse me." "Sure," they said, and they did. Next day, "Now I'll give you $0.25 to curse me." They agreed, looking puzzled. "Now," he said, "I'll give you $0.01 to curse me." "No way, that's not worth it," they complained, and refused to curse him any longer. So, what does it mean for you in your life, in the things that you experience, to take up your cross, to stand up to some of the violence that is done in our world with non-violence, and in doing so, change the world. Change the world. Amen.